How you doing? How you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. I apologize for my I guess all the color in the world behind me at 1 second. So it's just kind of new for me to be so up front. So plus I haven't Zoomed a lot. You're the second human being that I've had the honor to try to understand this sort of intimate. I wouldn't say I'd give into it to whatever anybody's thoughts are, but it is working and I've seen it work. And it feels pretty intimate, you know, but I'm not paranoid, but it's just like anybody could be there, anybody could be here. And I realized that when we were on the phone, anybody could be there around the phone. So
it's just different when you can see someone's face and read their face. But I'll tell you, I've been doing a lot of, I have a lot of grief counseling clients and I do Zooms, and it feels so intimate. Like you're actually sitting there with them. And I was really worried about it because I didn't know if people would enjoy doing sessions that way. And it absolutely works.
Well, I think it's a wonderful thing. It's taken me a while. Everybody's been pushing me to it. I'm a little bashful and I like to think I'm pretty private. So it's like, it's a different thing for me to do, which interests me, because fear sort of interests me to overcome fear and things like that, which I'm sure we could talk about. Anyway, yeah. Thank you for being part of the show. I really appreciate it. I'd like to just tell everybody that I like to dive into what I naturally think about.
Okay.
And I guess what that means is usually I don't have a lot of time to meet a lot of people or sit down or really get to know somebody, because it's always in passing, or I'm moving very quickly in one direction, or it's the opposite for somebody else. But I don't normally look into someone before I talk to them, because I just feel like there's too much incorrect human stuff.
Yeah.
So I feel like I can read people pretty well and just feel like what it's about when it's brought to me. So this idea, if you don't mind, and then I'm going to turn it over to you, but this idea of death, okay? I just want to start with death, the word death. So since I was a little kid, my wife and I were talking about this last night, that since I was a little kid, as long as I can remember, all I've ever thought about was death. It's an interesting like subject in my brain. Yeah. Because I believe I look at it differently than most, because most, I feel that when I get close to them in subject matter, they get a little, frightened, maybe a little paranoid. Maybe the clowner gives them a little anxiety. The anxiety turns to panic, and it's like, hey, we were just having a conversation about reality. And that's really what it is with me, is I think as a young child, I realized it was reality, or whatever reality is. I try to understand both. But I think everything I've ever done has sort of had a death approach artistically. I mean, all my imagery, and there's a biblical sense, because I went to a private school and I learned a lot by asking questions. Doesn't matter what faith I was, what school I was at, it's that I was allowed to ask questions, and yeah. I always will thank them for that. Whether they were right or wrong, I don't know, but I was always asked, you know, about God and stories, and then death, because it seemed like there was a lot of death. And I've been stuck on it forever. So before, like, I know people have sort of told me what you're dialed into, but before we may or may not get into that, because I just feel like I have an opportunity here to hear from someone who deals with that with people. But to start, frankly, just at what I believe is sort of like a zero point, which is this word that has a definition and means, it may have a definition made up by a society, but the word has an emotion and a chemical feeling differently for each human being on the planet. So it seems like maybe weird, maybe won't be weird, but I always tell my friends, my closest friends, I always say, look, I really don't know what's going on, but I know that everyone who is no longer here has been there longer than I will ever be here. So there's something with that.
You know, it's actually everything that you said I really connected with. We're a lot alike, probably more than you could imagine. I also went to a Catholic school and I asked a lot of questions. I went to catechism and all that when I was very young, because my mom was Italian and she wanted me to have that background and to be confirmed and all that stuff. But to be honest, I've been an atheist since I was a small child and I had a lot of questions. And as far as the death thing too, since I was a kid, I was really, really preoccupied with death and dying and why we die, what happens to the body when we die. And I'm not sure, why I felt that way. It was just something that kind of one day happened. My parents weren't in any way thinking about it or persuading me to think about it. I remember one time I was driving with my grandmother in the car and I was looking out the back window of her car and a dog got hit. And I saw the dog and his paw was smushed into the pavement. And I remember just, we were stopped. So I had to look at it and I couldn't take my eyes off of it. And I watched the dog struggle to lift his paw and he couldn't because it was, you know, on the pavement. And that was the first time I had seen death in front of my face. And it was shocking. And it was at the same time, I felt like there was this beautiful struggle almost. This animal was desperately trying to free himself from what was holding him down. And it was just like, I felt this connection with that animal in that moment. And then my granddaddy died and I went to his funeral. And I remember being just so amazed at, you know, the funeral and the grief. My dad is Black. And so Black funerals, my grandpa that died was Black. Black funerals are very different than white funerals, traditionally, I'll say, because it's just a different kind of celebration. And it was fascinating to me. And then going up to the casket, and in Detroit, where I'm from, you have full caskets. Usually you see the whole body head to toe. And I was just fascinated that there was my grandpa. And, I was probably about four. I could, you know, kiss him on the cheek. I could say goodbye, but like what? And he looked, it was just so much for me. And I became really, really fascinated with, like I said, death, dying, what happens to your body? Where do we go? I would, you know, take walks. And if I found an animal, I would inspect them to see, you know, I needed to know every aspect of why they died, what happened and what happens to the body. And then it just every little detail, I would read medical books. As soon as I could read, I would look through and read up on all the diseases I could find. And it was just something that preoccupied me, but not in a way that was necessarily scary. I was fearful of death. It seemed like the ultimate end to everything that you could ever dream of doing and being, and abandonment too. That because, you know, I had really loved my grandfather and I felt, you know, abandoned. So all of that, the fear of abandonment, I guess you'd say, but it was just such a fascinating thing for me. And then, you know, I had people around me saying, granddaddy's gone to heaven. And I didn't believe those things. As a very small child, I didn't believe that there was a heaven and a hell. I didn't believe it. So that kind of made my young mind even more inquisitive about death and what really happened. So I really just tried to come up with my own concepts when I was young, something that I was comfortable with to make it okay, that there was no heaven and hell, and that something else happens to us. And again, it was something that I just spent so much of my young life exploring and thinking about. Still to this day, I think about it. I think I was definitely the kind of person that I never thought about my wedding day. I never thought about having children, never thought about those milestones, but I thought endlessly about my funeral, what it would look like, what I'd be wearing, how my makeup would be, how my hair would be, who would be there, what they would say about me. It preoccupied me.
I understand every part of that. And with that said, the next part of it is two things. I talk about this a lot with people that I speak with in general, just because I try to be as much of an advocate as I can about helping as much as I can but there seems not to be enough hours in the day to have facts for everyone to listen. It's just, anyway, was there anyone in your life, mom, dad, sister, brother, I mean, just people that maybe saw your interest and gave you reward? You know, like, I see that you're interested in this, and we call it a casket. Or, I mean, did anyone notice that was older?
No, I don't think it was something that was comfortable for my family to acknowledge or put energy into. In fact, you know, the Monday night catechism classes that I had to go to, where I would ask my questions, you know, as a young child, and ask, well, what really happens? Because I don't believe this, or I want to know more about this. They actually would make me sit in the hallway because they didn't want me to ask the hard questions. And I do feel like, you know, I'm older, so maybe things have changed now. Maybe people are more open to talk about ideas, but, where I come from, it was very, kind of like, this is what you're going to believe. You know, I grew up in a factory town. This is how your life's going to go. This is what you're going to believe. And you're going to get married at this age and have kids, and life's going to be great. And that's all you're going to think about. So no, I didn't really have people even wanting to be in a band or anything like that. That was a completely foreign idea to people. So talking about death was a foreign idea. Even years later, when I went to go to mortuary school, my family really tried to dissuade me from doing that, because they said that I'll see things that I shouldn't ever see. They didn't want me to be a part of that world. And I understand, for most people, I think that death is the end of their American dream, and nobody really wants to come face to face with it and talk about it. But for me, it was a healthy thing. And I always loved even just the science aspect of it. I thought was fascinating. And I did, my grandma, who I lived with for quite a while, she did encourage the science part of that, because it was a subject that I excelled in. So that did help me, but really no one in my life was okay with me, talking about death. I remember even as a kid in school, I was would spend time thinking, researching everything death related. And I drew some drawings of fetuses that had, died, and I got in a lot of trouble, but it really wasn't trying to, I wasn't trying to be a weird kid. I was truly fascinated by, every aspect of human life, from the time that we're born to the time that we die, and, all the stages in between, and aging fascinated me, like I said, living with my grandma, I watched her change. And even that aspect even seemed more scary than death to me, getting older and not being able to do the things that you once did, not having the freedom to live your life. You go through so many stages of thinking about it, from it's so unfair to it's beautiful to, it's crazy.
Well, I asked that because it seems like there's so many areas in the human mind, I believe, we stay at because we believe we stay at. But who would have known, like a child may have an absolute interest in something like you had. And then, just to fast forward a little bit, vaguely, maybe discouraged to stay away from it because of personal beliefs, or who knows, maybe there was worry for you, and maybe, the non-understanding. But what I'm getting at is, who would know that? Who would know that a child could be interested? I mean, think about if you were encouraged and, instead of go to woodworking or crafting or cooking, you're over here. And that was going to be my next, I'm not even lying, the next subject was, I've always felt that in school, I couldn't excel in school because as long as the windows, as long as the curtains were open, I was out there. I could not focus on chalkboards and things like this. I always was like, why didn't they teach us that? Why did they take me to the zoo, where my empathy as like a very young child, I was like, that animal is miserable. No one's picked, like, look, there's urine in there. Like, you know, I hated it.
Yeah.
Why didn't they take us to the mortuary with Mrs. Johnson and say, hey, do you guys, you know, do you guys remember Mrs. Johnson? And are these things?
I totally believe that. But, and also, you know, I feel like children, they should be encouraged to talk about death. Like I said, when I was a kid, up until, anyone told me anything different as I got older. It's when someone dies, when you're young, and children can comprehend death and they can understand. If you talk to them about it in an adult way, it's perfectly fine. But to, you know, make an arbitrary statement like, grandma's gone to heaven, she couldn't come, you know, that, or, you know, or we had a dog that died once. The vet liked the dog so much he wanted to keep him. It's like, no, tell me the dog died so that I have closure. Tell me the dog can't come back. You know, I think it's really important to talk to children logically. And then the school thing too. I think it's so important. I didn't even know careers in mortuary science existed. I hated algebra, hated it. Didn't get it. Did terrible at it. But you know what? When I went to mortuary college and I realized that algebra is a huge part of my day, as far as chemical equations to mix my, you know, embalming fluids, I suddenly understood it and I loved it. And so I wish people would tell kids that, hey, you may not like doing this, but, you know, if you're interested in this, maybe you could see how math or science would apply to this maybe in your future. And maybe that would give them kind of a better understanding or kind of a love for something that they didn't know they could have a love for.
Well, exactly. And I always thought like, children say the most wonderful things. They draw the most wonderful pictures. They hear it all. They see it all. They're just sponges for everything. So it's like, you know, not to sound weird, but if you know, with adults, teachers, all the right people, looking at someone who has passed away, maybe a child asks, like, may I touch her?
Yeah.
And let's say it's like, there's the empathy we need to teach, of course.
Yeah, I had a case once at the mortuary that I worked at. I wasn't the embalmer in the case. I was the funeral director. And someone had left the organs. The guy had an autopsy. Someone had left the organs in the casket. And they didn't cover them up or anything like that. It was a big mistake. But the children saw it. And I was there with the family when they saw this bag of daddy's organs. And I had to come up with something right away to say. And I said, and I told them the truth. You know, this is what happens. We want your daddy to have everything when he's buried. So we're going to leave this here. But daddy had an autopsy. And so they have to take some things out, but they'll stay with him always. And they were fine. You know, it was completely fine. When you talk to someone, like they can comprehend it, you know, and talk to them, you know, obviously with care and love and speak clearly, then they understand. And it's not as hard as people think it is.
It isn't, you know, it's built in us, right? I mean, I think that's all I'm really trying to get to or wanted to discuss is that I think somehow we have forgotten. I don't know if everyone on the planet has forgotten because I have not been able to like share those experiences with such wonderful cultures that might embrace the passing on. You know, I'm in America, I'm in middle, you know, Iowa.
Yeah.
But what I mean is, it's basically what we're talking about is this, that I think we've lost this ability to understand that it's as much as a part of us, if not more. And we hate hearing that it is actually the only thing we're going to do in life is die. And there's nothing else. You might not be a rock star. You might not be a mechanic. You might not be a husband. You might not be a wife. You might not play music. You might not play, you know, you might not be the president, but you're going to die. So one way or another, it is something we've either sort of secretly want to deny, but I've always felt the more you embrace it, it scares people because, you know, they don't like that crazy talk, but it's like, my mom always taught me it was better to write it down or say it out loud than do it.
Yeah.
So I say a lot of crazy things and make a lot of people nervous, but it's like, I was brought up to literally write down on paper, like, if this person yells at me one more time, I might break his leg.
Well, that's what I tell people in my sessions too. Journal about it. When you, even if there's something like unfathomable that wants to come out of your mouth, write it down, say it out loud in a room by yourself, you know, let it out or else it's going to fester inside you. I was going to say that one reason that I think that people are so scared of death these days is because the whole way that we deal with aging and death has changed in the last, you know, 50, 60 years. You know, grandma and grandpa used to live at home. They used to get old while we were watching. They used to die in the home. The damn funeral used to be in the home. And nowadays, when people get old, we put them away. We don't look at them. They're behind closed doors in a nursing home. We'll go in once a week and say hi. So we don't see that. We don't see that. And it's frightening. And it gives us anxiety to, you know, go and approach it. And then people die in hospitals. And it becomes, you know, this like very sterile, upsetting thing. It's not a beautiful thing anymore, which is something that I am really passionate about bringing back. And I want people to know that it can be different. Your death can be the way that you want it. You can die at home. You can be holding hands with the people that you love. You can have the music that you want playing. You can have the scents that you want, you know, burning, whatever you want. You can dictate how your death will go to some extent, you know, as you get older or if you're terminally ill, just different, you know, things. But I think it's important for people to know that it doesn't have to be that way. And I think that as a culture, we really need to start embracing the elderly and showing more love and respect for them. That's really important to me.
Yeah, I think that's been going on forever. You know what I mean? I think that's a fear within all of us, you know, kind of like what you're talking about choosing. I think to begin with what you're talking about, it feels to me we all want to ignore it, and that's why it's put away. Somebody else is taking care of it, and it's all done. And you know, you write the check, and you're almost happier about that. And then it's over with. Then you're left with your thoughts, but really, it seems like we've lost the beauty in ourselves if we're ignoring someone we care for. So it seems like if we can't bring the beauty out of ourselves, because if we had that beauty, we would never ignore that.
Yeah.
We would never ignore those facts. We would embrace it so humanly that we wouldn't be in control. We've lost the ability to show those emotions in front of others. When I was young, I was around elderly people all the time because my father, there was a lot. We went to a small town. And the first time I saw somebody dying was with my dad in a nursing home. And all I really noticed was that this person had changed from the last time I had seen her to this time, which could have been 3 to 6 months.
Yeah.
And Alzheimer's, dementia. But what I really noticed was how my dad felt. It was the way he felt that just, you know, it ruined me, you know, just seeing him, feeling that. I could feel it in his hand. He was holding my hand. So we bolted. And then and I was younger. I might have been, I don't think I was in school yet. And the first time I witnessed somebody passing was in fourth grade. And I got called out of class. And the school told me before my parents could tell me. So that was a little confusing. Yeah. And then I remember, and I'm telling you this because I'm trying to bring all things back around. I do bring it back around. I swear. My problem was, never been to a funeral. I'm in fourth grade. I'm an only child. this was one of my dad's favorite people in the world. My dad was pretty eccentric, quiet. He said what he could as a dad. It meant what it did. I have no idea what it meant. Mom said the same thing. Then I'm in a funeral home and I'm expected to go pay respect. That wasn't hard for me to understand that I had to move forward because I'd already been in a private school where I had to go down in front of everybody and receive communion and all this crazy, you know, insecurity because I feel like everybody's looking at me. So I go up there, but when I got up there, I wasn't expecting what I saw. And the worst part about it for me wasn't the viewing. I was interested, but my mom and dad said that I could kiss my aunt. And that, I don't know why, but it didn't interest me. And I loved her very much.
Yeah.
Loved her. We had a close, but it didn't interest me because I don't know. I was just sort of forced into this thought process. And I kissed her. And the only thing I remember is I felt like the cold had entered me. I felt like that end, that proof of end, that there's a real cold there.
Yeah.
I think everybody knows that. And I felt like it entered me and I just backed up and I was back to where we were. So it's always been, and I had been thinking about death as a young child. So, but in a way of the word nothingness, blackness, just that's more where I go. And then we all go there, we're all there. But that day changed that color of no color, black being the absence of color, changed all that. And now it got into something else. So it's always just been this thing that I felt like most people I'm around, you know, they're not interested in speaking of it. And I've always felt a lot of art that I have done speaks to people. It's just my opinion. Art's subjective. Yeah. But in my opinion, I feel some people that I've been very lucky to talk about of things they feel with some of the art I've made, they feel like what I've been, you know, transcending through, which is I'm not going to forget it. I'm 51 now. I feel it more. And it doesn't mean it's tomorrow. Everybody gets it confused, you know, like, oh, knock it off. It's like, I'm 51, not 91. But
yeah, but you know, it's coming.
Yeah, my elbow is not the same. It's just not the same.
You know, it's like I'm in my 40s now and something like changed in me. You feel kind of invincible in your 20s and 30s and then something hits and you start just thinking more about, you know, I remember I was moving to a new place and I had all these trinkets that I've collected on tour and different, you know, I have tchotchkes all over the place and toys. And I was like, man, I just got this overwhelming sadness. And like, who's going to take all this stuff? I don't even have kids, you know? And it's like, who's going to, you know, and then it began to become the aging, like who's going to take care of me? Where's all my stuff going to go? Am I going to have to go to a nursing home where some nurse comes in and feeds me a pill and I have nothing around me that reminds me of, you know, who I was? Like it bothered me. So I was working for hospice for quite some time and I hated going into the rooms and seeing, you know, this, whoever it was, they could have been anything, you know, a teacher, a rock star, whatever, someone, they were important to somebody. But the walls are bare and you have no idea what they've accomplished in their life. Not even the smallest little stitch of who they were as human beings. It's just a person lying in a bed, getting older by the second, alone, you know, family comes in once in a while. And so all those thoughts like flooded into my head. And, you know, as I was moving and putting all my things away. So I really have to take myself out of that dark place and realize that, you know, I have a lot more living to do. And definitely working in death care has made me work harder on everything else, work harder on living and not wasting time. You know, I rarely even watch TV. I'm always creating art or writing or doing something because I don't want to waste, a precious moment not living.
I I mean, that's amazing. I mean, and you can, you know, you, what we do, we go out and we can either maintain full functioning focus, or we can get isolated, collect, go into crazy places, get home and just be so overwhelmed with nothingness.
Yeah.
You know, sort of all at once. It is spooky. I'm so thankful for people that work at hospice. Every school should have to maybe not enter these personal rooms because of how painful they are, but that word should be something you learn right away, because yeah. I mean, a similar story I'll share with you. It's quite different. My mom passed away from Alzheimer's, dementia, and several hundred TI strokes. And I would visit her in assisted care. And one day I had come in, and they always had this bizarre, just crazy shit going on for these people. Like older people who did Broadway came in and just ripping it down, and everyone's just, it was beautiful. It always moved me that they provided this, and the people were older that were providing it. And yeah. There was always some weird connection with these people that, you know, we think maybe have disappeared, but maybe they're completely there. I don't know.
Yeah.
But anyway, I was on my way to my mom's room, and there was a giant line. It was like, there are all these people, and sometimes they can be frightening because, you know, they're where they're at. And, you know, I'm generally very empathetic. So I can get very moved very quickly, and it just, I can feel the pain, and then, you know. So anyway, I got to the end of the line. There was a gentleman sitting on a 5-gallon bucket, not even a chair. And he was doing everybody's toenails. And I forced myself to stay there and watch for a while. Because I was like, if there wasn't people like him in the world, I mean, we'd be done. I couldn't believe it. No mask, no gloves. He was talking. I don't know if he was a doctor. I don't know if he was a volunteer. I have no idea. All I know is there was 50 elderly waiting to have their feet respectfully taken care of.
That's such a beautiful, beautiful thing. And I don't think many people understand how beautiful that is. You know, it's not just a guy cutting toenails. That's just a beautiful gift that he's giving them.
And that's why I stay there. And I may have said to him, I'm like, you know, hey man, I got to learn how to be you on something. I promise you, I can't do that because I just can't. I mean, I could, but I can't right now, but I need to get out there in the world, and I need to learn how to do that, this, what you're doing, because no one knows. And that's the problem. And if I hadn't walked in here, I had a code. I had to punch in a code to get in, so they couldn't get out. So beep, 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 you know, blah, 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 in mine, you know, here it is. That wasn't out at Burger King. That wasn't at the mall. That wasn't a free gift to anybody in Des Moines. That wasn't the whole city of Des Moines caring for everybody's position in this thing. So it blew my mind. And I stayed there for a good 15 minutes and just made myself download how I could apply what was happening there, and the happiness in the people's faces, the dignity. And most of them had Alzheimer's and still smiling, because their feet were getting done, smiling. I thought, well, there's a gap there. They're happy about this. Something's going on. Like, so anyway, different than what you said, but like, you know, those walls that are bare, you know, we need to make awareness that, you know, we're not blaming families or nothing, but man, what a hard place to be.
Well, and the hardest thing is like the lack of human touch and human contact. And so people, you know, if anyone out there is interested in hospice, even just volunteering, it's a huge, beautiful thing that you can do for someone, because I think that one of the most important things in the world is human touch, and just holding someone's hand for a minute, stroking their hair, touching them, because people don't get that anymore. It's such an important thing, and it can really change someone's life. Just having that, that, you know, intimacy with another human being, you know, just a simple touch.
Yeah. It's it definitely, again, I go back to like, do we just not want to be touched anymore? Is that being taught? Are we being desensitized? Are we doing it to ourselves? Is it, if you prorate the entire world, is it be above the 51% that it's moving that way? You know, but I completely agree, because I have been fortunate to go to other cultures and see how things are handled. You know, I've been in New Orleans and just been blown away by some musical funeral taking over a whole street, and I'm like, that's how I'm going, man. Like, I like, it's got to be celebration, you know. It'd even be funny if I fell out and had to be put back in, like, just to create a little drama, you know. If someone's someone's filming and it's gonna come out later and I directed it, but I'm already gone. I mean, that's how weird you can get. I tell my kids all the time, you know, that I've been working on my will so long. I have, my wife and I got asked to, you know, have that, you know, do you want to be revived conversation. And, you know, I'm always like, hey, does 31 days sound monetarily acceptable for a chance? Yeah. Give me 31 days. I want 31 days. How expensive is that? Is everybody going to be broke? Because if so, then I've had a good life. I guess no. But give me a chance.
I definitely want the revival. If like I do want, like, if something happens to me, that's important to me. Like, don't put me down yet. I want every last chance, because you always hear those stories where at the last possible minute someone sits up and they're.
It's true. Now I may get in trouble for saying this, but I don't think she would mind, because this is education. But on the other end of it, my wife, because of a lot of what she's gone through and can go through, she has a lot of things. So she could, quite frankly, go through something that's really bad and could be harmful. So, you know, she's opted for the other. And, you know, so now I got to deal with that. You know, yeah. I gotta deal with like this respect level of understanding that I don't have, she has no wife duties. There's no wife duties here. There's no husband duties. We're two human beings who have decided to share our lives together. And if the other as a human has chose to live their life, and as crazy as I get, it's like, you know, these are the things you gotta think about.
You have to think about it, and you have to talk about it with your significant other so they know what to do. Because if something happens and you don't know what that person wants, it's an even worse thing to deal with. And it's a deeply intimate conversation that you have to have about just those moments. And nobody wants to do it, because you don't want to think about life, you know, without your significant other. But again, you know, it
happens.
It happens. And being prepared and knowing what to do and knowing what someone wants, it's kind of like a last gift you can give them too.
I have a, like I said, I trail, but you make me think of things that are relevant to this. I had a funny situation. I'm gonna have something sent to you. I so badly want to talk about it, but I would give it away. I think it'd be good for everyone to hear it. But what I'll do is I'll send it to you. You can watch it, and then I'll link it to our interview, and then Perfect. Everybody can watch it and understand what I'm talking about. But I've had these, like that gentleman doing the feet, or you being in a room, noticing there is nothing adorning this woman's or man's achievements, life's ambitions, dreams, successes, failures, whatever it is, life. So my dad passed away, and he was quite a fellow, and he wanted to be cremated. And so my wife, I was on the road, unfortunately. I always knew that was going to happen. And my wife was there with my best friend, and they helped with all the hard stuff. And my mom had dementia, so it was a big messed up scene. Anyway, we got to the funeral home, and he wanted to be cremated. So the first in two boxes, one is a cardboard box, and I want to say it's $150. And it's literally this hardcore cardboard box that folds over and makes a casket, and that's that.
I know.
That's it, right. You know, it's like $90 to $150. It's cheap. And my wife's like, get that for your dad. And I'm like, I absolutely will not get that for my dad. My dad's not being burnt in a cardboard box. I said, what's next? So they bring out this $375 pine box, unfinished. Looks like I made it. Looks like me and my boys made it. I'm like, yes. My wife and I sort of get in an argument about how my dad's going to be disappointed that I spent too much money on this stupid box that's going to be burnt in like 5 minutes. And I'm proving that I never learned anything from him in this moment. And I'm like, I don't care. He's going to burn with wood. And that's the way I say it. And that was cool. Everybody left me alone. But now in the will, it stated that she wants the cardboard box. And I'm like, I'm your husband. You know, if unfortunately you were to go before me, I just want you to know, I don't care if it's in the will or not, you will not have a cardboard box to be, you know, cremated. So I know that's a lot of weird talk, but when you're confronted, and I like to believe that, you know, our brains, you know, I'm not separating us from people, but people like ourselves, we'll ask these questions and we'll be presented with these problems. And it'll blow our minds, you know, and then somehow it creeps in for the rest of our lives and makes sense. I could go so deep with it with you. What I'd like to say is, you know, I knew today could, you know, go a lot of different ways because you're really educated in a lot of different things, you know, not only entertainment, obviously, which is wonderful, and also both sides that you play, and that's kind of what, when I do ask for a little help to understand a few things, one thing that was very cool is that it was explained that you help on both sides. And, you know, I guess I traditionally heard the first side, birth, and that you help on both sides, and that made it really, I guess it made it sort of what you're completing in your own life. To me, I was like, whoa, like, you're really connected to another side of your own life begins and ends, and then you're being involved in beginning and ending, and that's amazing. But I thought that's a bigger talk, and I definitely talked to people, you know, twice, and haven't yet, but that's the plan, is to check in with people after enough people, just to give people time to think what we talked about and see if we pick up on anything that we did or build on something or come up with new stuff and whatever. But before we go and stuff, I mean, so what I'm saying is next time I want to be really educated on that. I was thrown a little bit by surprise with it, for obvious reasons. Anyone in the world that knows me, I'm still dealing with something that's very real to me, loss in the family, that it's an interesting thing, because what you tell a lot of people is there's nothing you can tell me. There's nothing in the world you can say to me to make me feel better or make me whatever. But, you know, as much as you say that, you have to believe the one that you love loves you. You know, it's a big thing. Yeah. So I thought next time we'd get into that. Wasn't really prepared with that when, you know, because of the, I only knew of the one side of it, and then I was informed, and then it took it there, and I was like, oh, I don't know if I'm, I could do it, you know, and have it last.
Yeah, well, I'm free for another chat anytime. I will just say one thing is that, you know, no one can tell you exactly how you're supposed to feel, because there's no right and wrong way to feel. And in certain situations, it's best to know that you're supposed to kind of feel everything and take it in and be fucking angry and be upset. And when those feelings come, allow yourself, you know, a lot of people, when it comes to grief, they don't understand anger in different aspects of it. And it frightens them that they're so angry about it. But in my experience, you know, kind of relishing in that anger and getting it out as best that you can is a really, really important thing to do.
My mom helped me with that too, not relating to anything I ever thought I was going to go through in life.
Yeah.
But also like writing it down.
Yeah.
It's so much better than acting it out. If you have to scream it out or cry it out, or, you know, try to punch the grass and not the wall, you know.
Yeah.
That's what my dad would say. Be like, because you're gonna fix the wall, buddy. But I mean, all those things, those are good things, you know. And it is, it's still very new to me and makes all the sense in the world to me, but
yeah, your mom's a smart lady. Like I said, journaling is one of the number one things that I help people with, and I, you know, guide them through it. We do exercises together with journaling. But, and even as a musician, you know, I've been self, you know, kind of medicating myself with writing my whole life, because sometimes when you feel that anger and that rage, but you write it down, by the time you get done writing it, a lot of those, you know, feelings have dissipated to the point where you can at least function, you know?
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you. I wanted to ask you before we go and all that stuff. I mean, what are you doing? Not to abruptly change, you know, but we were definitely sooner than later gonna, I'll prepare myself, and maybe we could, you know, do something for everybody by what we do, which is, I like to perform, and something like that wouldn't be a performance, but, you know, I think it'd be intimate and, you know, just gotta be prepared for it. And
yeah.
You know, because I don't know if I got anger, but man, yeah, I could make worlds collide, you know? So I don't know if that's anger, but that's how it feels. You know, I feel like if I could force things to collide, to just create something else, that'd feel real good. But on a different note, so what are you doing music wise and what's happening, and are anything going down, or what are you
doing? Yeah, well, it's been a weird year, as you know, and we were all prepared to go on tour last year and get out there on the road, and then the world came crashing down. And but we've been releasing the music that we were supposed to release, you know, last year when the touring cycle started. So we've been releasing a new single every month, which has been awesome, and new videos, and we're gonna do a live stream concert coming up. We haven't done one yet, so we're pretty excited about that. And then we're going to record more new music. And, you know, it looks like there's a little bit of a light at the end of the tunnel right now, maybe towards the end of the year as far as touring. So, but in the meantime, you know, we kind of had to make an executive decision and just kind of decide that we didn't want to sit on music anymore. I think that people need to hear new stuff. They need to be entertained, just a little way for us to put a smile on some people's faces.
Well, you know, it. I think it goes without saying that sooner or later, all of us were going to say, I have to do, you know, I think we probably all will go through a little ego or selfishness, because that's just built in a little bit. But in the end of the day, you do start thinking, well, I am in this situation. There's not a lot of facts. I could be proactive on what I really am. I think the greatest producers in the world would tell you, like, I don't need to produce you. Just do what you do. You know, you don't need to be told why you're so great. Be great. So I think all of us, you know, this has been a great time to, one, most importantly, try as hard as we can to make people happy. I got roped into doing a podcast to try and make people happy, only because I very much so am sort of a private person.
Yeah.
And I did most of my podcasts on the phone because I couldn't make things work. But it's mainly, I just feel in the world today, I guess my contribution would be to show a little bit more of myself, the human side, instead of some side maybe people see as what they see. But when the mask goes on, that's a whole other thing. So I think we've all been blessed to be able to make some smiles on people's faces. That's been real important because there are a lot of people that are very alone. They count on us. We count on them. That's what's really important, is they need to know the reason why we even think about making them happy is it kind of starts with us needing to be happy from them, you know?
Yeah. Well, there's that energy exchange when you're a musician or an artist. So it's important that people, you feel it when you're on stage and you see their faces and, people screaming back the lyrics that we wrote to us and the emotions on their face, and it really helps keep you going. So it is hard. And I'm a very private person too. And I'm not a big fan of being on the road all the time. That's just not who I am. But at the same time, you go up there every single night, and to feel that and to see that, it's so important. So yes, the fans really, really, help keep us going as well at home, So I feel like I'm just a boring old housewife now after spending a year, in the snow here in Illinois. And sometimes I'm in my yoga class, like, oh my God, that's right. I'm actually like a rock star somewhere in a parallel universe somewhere.
Well, and I think that's good though. I think that's going to be an important part of it, because, I've been having a lot of conversations that I've always believed there were a lot of people in our business that didn't belong in our business, that somehow got in our business. And I believe like people like that will probably move on and get more into a business mm-hmm. that they're probably suited for. So like when we return, I think our worlds are going to be much better. I generally think most people could use a little help in, let's just say I wouldn't have a problem wearing a mask my whole life for the rest of my life. And I probably went the first time I went to Japan, which was 20 years ago or 19 years ago, I saw people wearing masks to protect other people. I thought, you know what? I'll wear one the rest of my life. People in Iowa will think I'm some eccentric weirdo musician, but you know what? You didn't brush your teeth today, so get out of my face. And the heavy smokers or the guy who's got that barf breath, because you have one beer and you're like,
so. Yeah, we talk about the mask thing all the time. And we've been to Japan and Philippines many times, and people are just respectful.
Yeah, it's not a thing. I mean, everyone's like, Corona? I'm like, no.
I know. That's the thing. You can't even like cough anywhere now.
Anyway, well, hey, it's been a pleasure to talk to you. I look forward to all of us getting back on the road, and when we do, I'm going to do this Electric Theater in person. So we can just, that's been a big problem of my whole career, is that I'll just be totally honest. My very first tour was Ozfest, and my very first mission was to know when not to be in catering. Let me tell you why, because Sharon Osbourne could be in there with Mrs. Butler, or Geezer Butler could be in there. I mean, just all these heads, these very important people in there. And then, here I am, I'm nobody. And I go in there and I'm like, I just pop in my head and I'd be like, nope, I got to wait an hour. So my whole life has been diseased around like, kind of not eating catering or taking the time to get to know people, because I just always felt like none of us really have time. We all have an agenda, because you got to sleep, you got to eat, you got to interviews, get ready. There's alone time. So the time we get in catering, it's like, how's the family? How's your wife? How's the kid? Blah, blah, blah. It's the same questions for 20 years. It's nobody's fault. So I thought a little bit about this podcast. That's what's going to be cool. So when we get to go back down the road and we're performing on the same day in the same area, which is most likely 100%, we'll be able to make that agenda. Hey, I got to go talk to Clown for an hour.
Yeah. Instead it's funny. I think it was Mayhem or something years ago, maybe like 2012. I was working for Revolver at the time. It was before my band started touring a lot. And you were so gracious to me and so kind. And someone came in and said you were done with the interview. It was time to go. And you said, no, I'm enjoying the conversation. I want to finish. And I'll never forget that. I thought it was such so cool of you to do that.
I really appreciate that, to be honest, because you've done a million interviews yourself and you know how people, they bring an agenda. And that's why that it's not a rock star's game. It's just like people want to bring pain. And if you have good people around you, they'll help you keep it to 15 minutes.
Yeah, of course.
But if you have the best people around you, they'll do nothing but bring great people to you. And then you can always nudge that to reality of like, hey, I'm safe, she's safe, we're having a wonderful time. I appreciate you telling me that because I work hard. I've changed a lot from 98. You wouldn't believe how many people just think they're getting something from 1995 and 98, but like I have made it really a life's effort to try and be selfless, at least for the last 6 years. I've been working very, very hard on trying to understand the things that really hurt me that if I could fix, I could bring to everyone. And maybe that's good, maybe that's bad, but I feel like that's what I'm doing. Sounds like that's what you're doing.
Yeah.
And I think sooner than later, do you do a podcast?
I put one up and then I didn't do it because I just felt like it was so much time. And I felt like during this pandemic, I was trying to do more art, trying to do more counseling sessions for people, and I got overwhelmed.
Well, I say because I think it'd be interesting if we picked it up again and then specifically nail the subject.
Yeah.
And I can be a little bit more mentally prepared because no matter what, I'm going to be taking it one place on one end. And I can do it. It's easy. But I wasn't so prepared for it on this one. But we should schedule that sooner or later.
Yeah, for sure. We can definitely do it for mine. My podcast was called Good Grief. And I really enjoyed doing it. So I'd love to do it,
And we can do it on this too. But I've done that a couple times with some people where they have their own show. So I interview them and then I go on theirs and then we share it. But look, be safe.
Thank you.
It was great talking to you. I believe you and I could probably talk for a very long time on things that most people probably won't scratch, where we've been, where we allow ourselves to go, those long hallways that are way down there in our minds, that we are inquisitive and open. I love fear, but I don't like being scared, but I like fear because I know I can overcome it. I don't like to be scared. That seems... that doesn't seem correct, but if fear is in front of me, man, I sure love to see if I can step up and see what that means to human life. So I think anything we talk about would be really interesting. So
yeah, I would love to do that. So we'll work it out for sure.
All right, and tell everybody in your world hello.
I will. Charlie said hi. Charlie from Anthrax. So he sends love. I told him I was going to talk to you. And he said, tell him I said hello.
all those guys are always the best guys saying hello at the weirdest times. And that's always the coolest thing for me because, I grew up listening, and it's just, it's just nice. Humans are humans.
And I wanted to say too, so Charlie and I are doing an art show together March 20th here in Chicago. And we're doing it with punk rock and paintbrushes. And I believe you were going to do some stuff with her too. Maybe sometime in the future, we'll all put our art in the show together.
I'm definitely in with whatever. I'm doing a lot of that in 2021. I promised everybody I was going to say what I mean quicker,
yeah,
faster. no repeating, no redundancy, and get let people know just about how much art I really make, you know?
Yeah, it's important. And I think people really appreciate it. I had to kind of twist Charlie's arm to do it, but he's been an artist his whole life. You know, he came up with most of the Anthrax cover work. And I was like, you know, I want people to see this side of you. You know what I mean?
Of course. Well, people want to know. I mean, how many of us grew up just looking at albums?
Exactly. And that's how I connected with him. You know, that's how we first started dating, was because we exchanged artwork. So it's like, I want to share it with the world. You know, that's why we became such, you know, great friends immediately.
Well, art brings us all together, and that's exactly what we're doing right now. So, and life is the biggest art project of all. And you're right in the middle of both ends. So that's awesome. So have a great day.
All right. We'll talk soon.
Safe, and we'll talk soon.
All right. Bye.